morning. This is Isaac Evans France, Vermont Viewpoint, WDEV out of Waterbury, Vermont. This morning, we are going to be joined by Representative Laura Sibilia, Vice Chair of the House Committee on Environment and Energy, followed by Senator Rebecca White, the Clerk of the Senate Committee on Natural Resources and Energy. Then about 9:30, we'll be joined by Jane Lazorchak, the Director of the Climate Action Office in the Vermont Agency of Natural Resources, and Indra Acharya, Public Engagement Consultant at the Vermont Climate Council. At 10 o'clock, we'll be joined by Bill McKibben, the author, environmentalist, and activist who lives here in Vermont. Looking forward to talking about Earth Day, which was yesterday, and what Vermonters are doing about the climate crisis. So our first guest today is going to be Laura Sibilia, state representative who's the vice chair of the House Committee on Environment and Energy. She may be joining us a bit later, and we'll be speaking with Senator Becca White, who's the clerk of the Senate Committee on Natural Resources and Energy, in just a moment. Senator Becca White is a fellow lifelong Vermonter. She graduated from Hartford High School and went on to study at UVM. Upon graduation, Senator White began her career as an organizer for a local solar company, then worked as a community engagement manager for Efficiency Vermont. She's now, in addition to a state senator, she's also a part-time cashier at the Upper Valley Food Co-op. She's one of the senators from Windsor District, and she began her term in 2023. She's the co-chair of the Climate Solutions Caucus and the Futures Caucus. She lives in White River Junction with her husband and their cat, Ms. Kitty. So Senator White will be joining us this morning in a little bit. We're going to take a short break in the meantime, and we'll be back in a few moments. This is Isaac Evans France on Vermont Viewpoint, WDEV out of Waterbury. Good morning. This is Isaac Evans France. I'm hosting the Vermont Viewpoint program here on WDEV out of Waterbury, Vermont. This morning, we'll be joined by you folks around Vermont who are working on climate change. We are looking forward to hearing from folks from the Vermont State House of Representatives and the Vermont State Senate. At 9:30, we'll be joined by Jane Lazorchak, the Director of the Climate Action Office in the Vermont Agency of Natural Resources, and by Indra Acharya, a Public Engagement Consultant and Facilitator at the Vermont Climate Council. At 10 o'clock, we'll be hearing from Bill McKibben, author, environmentalist, and activist. And our first guest will be Rob Kidd, who's the program manager at the Vermont chapter of Sierra Club. Yesterday was Earth Day, so happy belated Earth Day. As I was driving up this morning from Brattleboro, it's quite a bit of green out there. I hear there may be some snow up in the northern part of Vermont in the next day or two, but for today, nice spring day. All right. Hey, Rob, do we have you on the line?
Yes, you do, Isaac.
Excellent. Well, welcome. And for full disclosure, this is Isaac Evans France. I am a member of the executive committee of the Vermont Sierra Club. I wanted to make sure you had a chance, listeners, to hear from Rob Kidd, who is program manager here in Vermont for the Sierra Club. Rob, you want to introduce yourself and tell us what you do?
Okay, yes, I am Rob Kidd. I'm the Vermont chapter of the Sierra Club's Conservation Program Manager. I am the one staff person designated directly for the Vermont chapter of the Sierra Club, but we also have three different national employees who live in the state. And the Vermont Sierra Club is primarily heavily volunteer-driven. Myself, like I said, as the staff person, I've been involved with many different issues over the years, including clean water, forest protection, clean energy, and of recent times, a lot of transportation-related work, because for those who follow this issue, just a few years ago, 48% of our carbon emissions came from transportation. Now, it has dropped down to about 39%, so we're at the top tier of our carbon emissions, so we've been also still working on addressing energy usage, so other policies. So that's the short story of what I do.
Well, welcome to the show, Rob, and it's Rob Kidd with Vermont Sierra Club. So, Rob, as I was coming into the studio this morning, I heard on Vermont Public that the federal government, as part of the Inflation Reduction Act, is awarding Vermont $60 million for solar. Could you tell us a little bit about what this is and what this might mean for Vermont?
Yeah, so let's give a lot of credit for Senator Bernie Sanders for that, the Solar for All program, and then actually the Vermont administration actually applied for these federal grants that were through the EPA. And this is just going to be extending access to solar for people can actually mitigate their impacts from climate change. So instead of relying on oil furnaces and propane, adding more emissions, they can adopt to heat pumps and having the solar, so then they can actually offset their cost of power generation. Now, this is going to be administered by a lot of the states, so the program details of how that application is going to be addressed is going to be kind of flushed out over the years, so this is something I think everybody who's listening to this should be paying more attention to. I apologize, that's not my area of full knowledge base, but it's going to be helpful to help get people off of fossil fuels and to create the power themselves at their own homes, and not just relying on utilities providing the power.
Thank you, Rob. And I know independence is an important value for many Vermonters. So in line with this, the Vermont House of Representatives voted last month to pass a new renewable energy standard bill, H-289, which is a policy that sets requirements for energy providers throughout the state and requires utility companies to buy 100% renewable energy by 2030. Which is just about 6 years away. So at the moment, H-289 is being considered by the Senate. I understand this is a product of an agreement between the regulated utilities and environmental and energy advocates. Could you share anything about this process or what you know about this bill?
Yes. So this, I'm going to say, is a groundbreaking bill. Just kind of give the listeners a type of how much magnitude this is. The Renewable Energy Vermont group actually went on and looked at an analysis on this, and they compared this to taking about 160,000 cars off the road. That's how much comparative wise. It's not just small little change. Now, also another thought process, just to tell put this into the viewership. Everybody always talks about how expensive it is. It could be. But actually, in the reverse, it actually generates the economy, because every 75 cents of every dollar you spent on fossil fuel, 75 cents to 80 cents, will leave the state of Vermont. Now, if you purchase the same equivalent power renewable energy electricity, that stays within the state of Vermont. So 75 cents of every dollar will stay in the state of Vermont. So it's actually a beneficial for the whole general economy to encourage more renewable energy, get off of fossil fuels. So that's one of the things I'm just going to say just to start the conversation about on this. Now, the process is, I know you had Representative Laura Sebelia on the schedule, and I want to give her a lot of credit because last year, in the House, the environmental community and the utilities, we were diametrically opposing odds. Like, we did no direction, like nothing, we can come agreements. We just said something needs to be done, but every solution was never came about. And Representative Sebelia created a working group that consisted of all the major environmental organizations and all the regulated utilities, including the municipal utilities and the co-ops. And they basically met all at end of last summer to the fall, and right at the end we created an agreement that would practically increase in-state renewables and increase region renewables and create this drive to go to fully 100% by 2030, and then depends on some of the other regulated utilities because of their, like Washington Electric Co-op and Burlington Electric Co-op are already at 100% renewable. They have different rules and requirements, but it's basically going to get us to fully 100% renewable energy by 2035. So it's something amazing that happened, that you can walk into a room, get majority of the environmental community and the utilities to come to an agreement, and that would not have happened without Representative Laura Sebelius' work.
Well, thank you so much. This is Rob Kidd that we've been speaking with. This is Isaac Evans France on Vermont Viewpoint, WDEV. Rob Kidd is the Conservation Program Manager at the Vermont Chapter of the Sierra Club. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Rob.
Yes, thanks, Isaac, and good luck with everybody else.
Thanks. Our next guest on the show this morning is Senator Becca White, who is the clerk of the Senate Committee on Natural Resources and Energy. She is one of the senators from the Windsor District, also in southern Vermont. So, Senator White, good morning.
Hey, Isaac, how are you?
Good to hear your voice.
Yes, and it was lovely to hear Rob Kidd. Rob is a very important player in the State House when it comes to environmental policy, and I always appreciate his thorough knowledge. So thanks, Rob.
And Senator White, I understand that you're co-chair of the Climate Caucus. Did I get that right?
Yeah, so the Climate Solutions Caucus has two chairs. We tend to like to have a House representative and a senator as our co-chair. So I get to be the senator who co-chairs.
All right. And I understand that the House Bill 289, the Renewable Energy Standard Bill, has landed in the Senate. I was interested to hear how your committee is handling this and where you are in the process with it.
Well, you've got the breaking news factor on your side, which is yesterday, Senate Natural Resources met on a Monday, which is it's out of the ordinary for us to meet on a Monday. Normally we start on Tuesdays. But due to the time we need to actually pass a bill, to pass a renewable energy standard, we met yesterday. And in the evening around 3:34, we passed the bill. We passed the renewable energy standard out of committee by concurring. So concurring means that we agreed with the House's version and we did not make any changes. That was a long discussion, and for folks who are interested, I didn't catch fully what Rob discussed as it relates to the bill, but I did hear his description of the compromise that was come to between what different members of the House were looking for and the utilities and the renewable energy developers. So that rings true. There was some serious compromise on all sides, and I think the main point of contention right up to the end where we had large agreement, but there were members of the committee on the Senate side, including myself, who were concerned about the loss of group net metering or virtual net metering, which allows for someone to build solar, let's say, on their house, and then donate or provide the power to be allocated to a different meter further away. So that could be like what we have at my home where my mom is a community solar array member over at a location in Heartland, virtual group net metering. So we did have a lot of discussion about that. There's so much good in the bill, but that was, I think, the point of contention that we really focused on right there at the end. But I voted to concur with the House version along with three of my colleagues, one no vote in committee on this point. I decided to vote yes because I feel that the compromises that were made by the utility companies and in large part the direction that the bill gets us moving towards is better than the trade-off of I would say, not removal of group net metering as an option, but both limiting who has access to it and potentially making it more affordable for a larger group of people. So exciting stuff. To concur with the House means that we really valued their work, and it also means that the bill has an opportunity to pass this session, and we anticipate a veto, so we'll need more people to to vote for it than we would if we didn't have a veto. To do a veto override, we need 20 in the Senate and 100 in the House. So to have time to be able to accomplish that, we concurred.
Thank you, Senator White. And I understand there was a strategic decision within the Renewable Energy Standard Coalition or work group to not include ratepayer protections, or in other words, protections on for the people who consume electricity. Like, I would imagine that would be like myself, who pays an electric bill. Can you speak about that? And you know, I know this is affordability is something you brought up, and that's a concern for many Vermonters who struggle to make ends meet. What are the mechanisms for protecting people who are looking at their electric bills?
Yeah, so I would start by saying that the House started with the Renewable Energy Standard, and as I pointed out, we did not have the ability to make any changes to actually meet the deadline to pass the bill. So the Senate actually only had 3 days to really, maybe even four if you count yesterday, to review the bill, and then we did make no changes. So while I personally, and I'm sure if you talk to other senators in the committee, you would get the same answer, we would have been interested in that conversation. We just were not able to due to the extreme time crunch. So let me start there. But I do know that I think it's 305 has some ratepayer protections in it, if that's the same that you're describing, that's coming over from the House. So I would look to that if folks have questions about that specific way to support ratepayers with those types of protections. But your main point, I think, is how do we make both meeting our climate requirements happen and make sure that Vermonters can afford to electrify? Because affordability, time and time again, is the number one issue, then reliability. So you have to make sure that any solution you move towards addressing the climate crisis has affordability and reliability at the forefront. And so I would say that the Renewable Energy Standard actually, as we've passed it, gets us to that goal at a much quicker pace, in part because we know that renewable generation is lower cost. You have less transmission costs, meaning the actual travel distance of the power. It can reduce the cost there for Vermonters. And it also can be a way to lower rates if done correctly. So that was a point that the utilities made time and time again, was we want to make sure that we can keep our rates affordable. We have the most stable and low-cost electricity rates in New England now, so how do we maintain that? And I think the Renewable Energy Standard we passed out is as close as we can get to making that a reality. But I also look forward to seeing what the House has with those specific ratepayer protections in, I believe, H-305.
Okay. Well, thank you, Senator White. Now, I heard about a bill called the Make Big Oil Pay bill, or the Climate Superfund bill. Could you speak about what this is and what the status of that bill is?
Yeah, I think that's number 259, but don't quote me. Make Big Oil Pay, or as Sandra Hashim, who was the presenter on the floor of the bill, puts it, the Superfund bill. We passed that from the Senate. It's over on the House side. It was led by kind of a unique group of people, because typically when you hear climate change bills, they go through Senate Natural Resources or Agriculture or Ways and Means, or another committee kind of that ilk. But this bill came out of Judiciary. And that's because Judiciary has a unique role in how we hold fossil fuel companies, how we actually look at the legal mechanisms for compensating us for the cost of the damages that they have caused. That's all through the court system, is essentially how the bill looks at it. So we passed the bill out of the Senate side, and I believe it's over on the House side. I'm not sure where it's landed, but it has been a priority bill. And I expect it will be vetoed by the governor, because at this point, any climate change-related bill, I just assume he's going to veto, because I don't think there's one he hasn't vetoed yet, at least since I've been in the legislature. We're going to need to work to get those 20 votes in the Senate and 100 on the House side. But we have the votes from the bill passage on the Senate side, at the very least. So if everyone remains the same position as they were when the vote was cast originally on the bill, will be good for a veto override. The main point of why I support the bill is because we know that climate change has cost us a substantial amount of money as a state. We're not even the $1 billion alone for the flooding gets at the long-standing impacts that we've seen from carbon emissions related to fossil fuel companies and the way that they've impacted us. So there was one other point I was going to make, which is attribution science is one key part of the bill. And attribution science is a very well-defined type of science that lets you look at how much the fossil fuel companies, how much you can attribute to them in particular. So, yeah.
Thank you for that. Now, and we're speaking with Senator Becca White, the agency, the Senate Committee on Natural Resources and Energy. Senator White, what motivates you in terms of taking action on the climate crisis? I know you've been working on this issue since before you joined the state legislature.
Yeah.
Interested to know, what drives you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you may have picked up on the fact that I'm under the age of, my 30th birthday is in July, so I'm under the age of 30. So the climate crisis will uniquely impact me because of just the sheer age that I am, which that has always been a motivating factor for me, just knowing that I want to be in a position where throughout my life I live in a habitable, comfortable place. So it's kind of a I don't want to be too morbid about it because I am extremely optimistic about our future. But when you look at the science, I mean, we really are in a dire predicament. And if we don't act to reduce our carbon emissions or adapt to the changing climate, we will be in a situation where we are unable to have the type of food that we're used to having, to be able to live in the types of houses that we currently do, or to even be able to travel how we like to. I think my main motivation is making sure that Vermont is a lifeboat for as many people as possible as we weather the storm that is the climate crisis. I grew up in a low-income household, so I have the combination of knowing what it means to need to reduce your usage for the financial reality, but also was raised in a very conscious environmental household. So I've got the combo of Vermont frugality with environmentalism, which those two things can go really well hand in hand.
Well, thank you so much, Senator Becca White, as clerk of the Senate Committee on Natural Resources and Energy. It's a treat to have you here on the show. This is Isaac.
Thanks,
no problem. I hope you have a great day and good luck with the rest of your session.
Yeah.
This is.
Well, thank you for your timing. We're about to go on the floor.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Bye bye.
Hello, this is Isaac Evans France on Vermont Viewpoint WDEV out of Waterbury. This morning we're talking about Earth Day, which was yesterday, and Vermonters' response to the climate crisis. We just heard from Senator Becca White over at the State House, and in a little bit we'll be hearing from Bill McKibben, a climate activist and author based here in Vermont. Our next guests now are Jane Lazorchak, the director of the Climate Action Office in the Vermont Agency of Natural Resources, and Indra Acharya, a public engagement consultant and facilitator at the Vermont Climate Council. Good morning, Jane and Indra. How are you doing, Jane?
I'm great, Isaac. Thanks so much for having me this morning.
Glad to have you. And Indra, are you there?
Yeah, good morning, Isaac. Good to hear your voice.
Well, welcome to the show. So, Jane, let's start with you. I understand that you stepped into a new role working as the director of the Global Warming Solutions Act in 2020, and as the director that you work closely with the Climate Council to stand up Vermont's initial climate action plan. which addresses how the state will cut our emissions while investing in our rural communities to adapt to climate change and build resilience. Now, as you have set up the Climate Action Office, you're working with staff to coordinate and provide expertise and capacity on state-led climate initiatives and provide some of the monitoring, assessment, tracking of climate adaptation, mitigation, and resilience activities necessary to evaluate progress over time in achieving the requirements of the Global Warming Solutions Act and the implementation. Could you tell us a little bit about the Climate Action Office and just kind of how you got into this work?
Sure. Thanks so much for the question and really nice introduction. So I had the privilege of stepping into the Secretary's office after a career in fish and wildlife, actually, for more than 15 years. I've been at the agency now almost 20 years and have supported both public land management and land conservation. Stepping in to work for the Secretary's office and developing the first climate action plan was really sort of a sprint to the finish in meeting our requirements around the Global Warming Solutions Act, which required us to stand up that first plan by the end of 2021. Coming off of the COVID pandemic, it was really short. It was challenged by stay-at-home orders, being challenged also by not getting out and working with the public, transitioning to online. But there was always this long-term goal and appreciation that while that plan was rushed and didn't really support all the necessary strategies and actions and working with Vermonters the way that we knew we had to, there was an interest in putting forward an office that would help both meet the requirements of the GWSA, work to update the climate action plan on a periodic basis as required by the law, but also do the really good hard work of identifying gaps and addressing programmatic work within our office to leverage and amplify work across all of government to meet our climate challenges, and then to really foster and engage Vermonters in that process through community engagement that wasn't one-off when we had to develop plans, but really looked at how we would build relationships with Vermonters long-term to identify and co-create those solutions to bring back into government and hopefully address and work hard to meet those requirements. And I'm really glad to be joined by Indra today because the Climate Action Office has supported that work strongly, and Indra is a part of that through the engagement that we're doing with Vermonters to both address the needs of the Climate Action Plan, move forward with the recommendations in that space, but also hear from them about where government is missing the mark, what we can be doing better, how we can bring more voices into that conversation. And again, Indra has been really critical to that, both in working with the Climate Council, but also in thinking about creative solutions to how we bring more voices into that conversation. So the Climate Action Office, while in ANR, has the really lofty job of speaking to climate action across all agencies, because while ANR plays a critical role in climate action, we're not the only agency at the table. It's really an all hands on deck, both with the Vermonters and state government. So we're working across government to meet those solutions.
Thank you, Jane. And for folks listening, ANR is the Agency of Natural Resources. You mentioned Indra, who we also have on the line. Indra was born and raised in a Bhutanese refugee camp in Nepal, where his family sought refuge from ethnic cleansing. As a child in exile, he led several advocacy and leadership initiatives focused on children's and human rights and educational opportunities, starting at the age of five. Indra, I'd love to hear what you were doing at the age of five at some point, and if you feel like sharing. And you know, you resettled in Vermont over 10 years ago. You've been involved in various local, statewide, national policy and advocacy initiatives. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Isaac.
You are currently a public engagement consultant and facilitator at the Vermont Climate Council, among other roles in Vermont. Could you tell us a little bit about your role with the Climate Action Office and the Vermont Climate Council?
Absolutely. I am supporting the public engagement work within the Climate Action Office through Consensus Building Institute. And I see my role, the role of my team, we have four folks working with the CBI team, as reaching out to Vermonters who traditionally would not have a say in the policy conversations that we are having throughout the state, because it is very important that we hear from everybody, including those who will be impacted the most. including folks living in the rural communities, folks with low income, moderate income, folks who are from diverse racial ethnic backgrounds, people who do not understand and speak English, and folks who generally feel like policy discussions are not something they can be a part of. So we show up in the communities where people are, attend events, sometimes show up at grocery stores and chat with people, and sometimes host community conversations where people feel comfortable and hear their thoughts and perspective as it relates to us collectively trying to find the solution to climate climate change and its impact in Vermont and in the lives of Vermonters.
Thank you, Indra. And I see that we have a caller, Mary, from Randolph Center. Mary, you're on the line.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Yeah, listening to all of your callers this morning, it keeps going around in my mind, this question, is Vermont's pending policies and action toward renewable energy and climate change, is it in direct relation to our contribution as a state to climate change?
Great question, Mary. Is our contributions in addressing the climate crisis proportional or in relation to our impact in the climate crisis? Jane, would you be up for taking that question?
Yeah, I think that's a really good one, and I think that relates a lot to the way the law was written. So I think what Mary's alluding to is, you know, the balance of cutting our emissions with understanding that our role regionally, nationally, globally is relatively small compared to our neighboring states and the rest of the country. That said, we have a moral and statutory requirement to cut our emissions proportional. And so our state, for example, annually emits under 8 million metric tons of carbon climate pollution. Our largest sectors are what you would probably expect. Climate pollution comes from our transportation and our buildings and thermal, how we heat our homes and move around the landscape. Those sectors are required to proportionally cut their share in relationship to all of the other emissions from agriculture, electricity, industrial pollution, things like that. But our emissions are relatively small. Our next door neighbor, New York, emits more than 10 times on an annual basis what we emit. So understanding that even if we cut our emissions, as much as the law says, we're likely going to feel the impacts of climate change and already are through increased climate disasters such as the flooding that we had last summer and will continue to have. Those kinds of impacts and the way that we contribute to meeting climate change solutions have to be balanced with investments in how we make our communities stronger, more resilient, and adaptive to climate change. And that is something that our office is really pushing forward with. We're working to staff the governor and the treasurer's office this year on the development of a resilience implementation strategy, understanding that government is doing a lot as our communities to meet that challenge. But knowing that there are gaps, some of the gaps that came forward in the flooding last summer was response and funding around landslides, thinking about what those gaps are across and how we prioritize those and ultimately fund those, because those kinds of strategies around adaptation and resilience have extreme co-benefits. So what does that mean? Clean water, conservation, access to land. So we know that we have to cut our climate pollution, but we also know that we need to balance it with other investments to make our state resilient and stronger to climate change. And I think that is not only playing our role, but also thinking about what our role is nationally and how we meet the climate challenge. So it's an exciting time, and I think that it has to be an all hands on deck to looking at different strategies and solutions.
Jane, we just heard that the federal government, as a result of the Inflation Reduction Act, is sending $60 million our way for investments in solar. Could you speak at all about this, and will your office be involved with this project?
Sure. That money is coming over to the Public Service Department, Energy. That's from the Department of Energy. We have a really robust and great collaboration with the Energy Office in the Public Service Department. As I mentioned earlier, the Climate Action Office is helping to support and amplify work across state government. We're governed by an interagency advisory board of which the Public Service Department is an active member. Solar for All is a really exciting opportunity, one of numerous ones that are bringing in dollars to drive down the affordability of electrification, including solar, as well as complement other programs through the Inflation Reduction Act that we've been planning and anticipating for. So Solar for All is going to be managed out of the Energy Office, but our office actually has a grant out for $100 million called the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant, which anticipated and planned for Vermont being successful in the Solar for All application. And so Climate Pollution Reduction Grant was the biggest pot of broad-based funding for states to access to drive down climate pollution, so to put in carbon reduction measures. And that has additional funding for electrification that would go to the Public Service Department to further support solar and transformation for moderate income Vermonters. So understanding that all of the aggressive climate reduction goals that we have on the books requirements will not only require us to fund fully low-income Vermonters, but also leverage moderate-income Vermonters to make these shifts. So we have a unique opportunity between now and beyond 2030 to really be thinking about how we leverage federal dollars to ensure the most cost-effective climate pollution reduction measures we can in Vermont to meet our emissions reductions requirements, which, if we haven't touched on yet, the first of is for 2025, but a very aggressive cut is for 2030, which requires us to essentially cut our emissions in half. And we know that without these federal dollars, we would not be able to make it. And so we're really excited about Solar for All, and we'll be working to complement that with additional federal resources through the Inflation Reduction Act over the next year, hopefully leveraging and making these transformations even more affordable for Vermonters.
Now, that's a lot of money you're talking about. We're talking about tens of millions of dollars flowing into the state from the federal government through the Inflation Reduction Act. How can Vermonters access these resources for going solar? How does Solar for All actually be for all?
Well, I'll just say that that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, is, you know, navigating, especially for low-income Vermonters who are struggling to meet their basic needs, trying to access and make sense of all of these resources that are available to them. And I'll just say that we've been working really closely with CAP agencies in Vermont to think about how we create a system through energy and financial coaches that is as easy and transparent as possible, so that as Vermonters are reaching out to CAP agencies, having questions about heating or fuel costs, that we're giving them a whole package to look at their homes, their transportation, and making it as easy and straightforward for them to access the dollars and not have to navigate all the application process. So it's inherent on and incumbent on state agencies to not only get these dollars, but to think about how we pass them through in the easiest way possible to Vermonters, to make sure that it's not just about weatherizing your home, but as you're getting funds to weatherize your home, we're also handing over grants and funding to fuel switch and electrify your house. So really thinking about whole home transformations, transportation issues, and other things all at once when we are having conversations with low-income and moderate-income Vermonters.
And Jane, I heard that yesterday on Earth Day, a new website was launched for Vermonters to streamline the process of figuring out which subsidies and rebates and programs having to do with weatherization, going solar, that people can access. If anybody who's listening has information about that website they want to share, feel free to call in. The number is 802-244-1777. Indra, I'd like to turn back to you. You were speaking about your work with engaging Vermonters who may not have been part of the conversations that created the legislation, that may not have the access to information or to financial resources to be able to participate in the decision making. And so interested to hearing, when you're listening and convening Vermonters and getting input, what happens with the input that you gather?
Well, So let me begin by saying the need for us to engage those Vermonters is crucial, because the impacts of climate change will be experienced by those who are at the lower end of the resources. Therefore, it is really important that we engage them in this policymaking process, one. Number two, what happens? First, it really depends on what stage of engagement we are in. In many cases, we have seen that it is awareness building. A lot of people do not even know that we are talking about it at a statewide level, and there is a lack of awareness. If that's the case, we are simply passing the information, inviting them to different conversation that we are having. But if it is post that, and if people are really sharing, and even in that cases, like people have a lot of experience and a lot of feedback and policy ideas, but they don't think of it as a policy idea. When we get those information, we are compiling all of them. We share that with different subcommittees that we have. I used to serve on the Just Transition Subcommittee a while ago. We share with them. We share with the Climate Action Office. We share with the Climate Council. And we do create, you know, monthly newsletter where we include the voices of Vermonters. We are still in the initial stage of, like, developing the entire procedure of, like, how do we take it at a system level. But thus far, it is more of, like, sharing with the people who are engaged in policymaking, engaged in thinking about equitable solutions. So we are still devising those pathways to share those ideas.
Thank you, Indra. And I see that we have a caller, Xenia from Barrytown. I got to visit Barry last summer and connect with folks there who have been impacted by the flooding that we saw last summer. Xenia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm interested in solar, but I have two barriers to one is that I am low income. Actually, I live on a south-facing hillside, halfway up the backside of Beckley Hill. So I have good sun. But I am not on the Internet, and I can't do websites. I had a stroke some years ago, and since then I really don't succeed in doing digital. So it seems like, you know, they say, oh, well, we'll just do a virtual tour of your house about weatherization and virtual this and virtual that and website this and website that. So, you know, I don't know if I could afford Internet, but it's moot because of the leftover cognitive problems from the stroke. So I guess, what are some useful phone numbers? Obviously, I can do telephone, and please remember to give out the toll-free number, Isaac, when you give out the number, not just the one that costs money if you don't live in Waterbury. So that's what I'm asking is how to look into getting solar and weatherization and stuff without being on the Internet and without having email and all of those things.
Xenia, thank you so much for your question. I just want to provide the Capstone Community Action's phone number. If you have a pen and paper, it's 802-479-1053. Again, that's the Capstone Community Action. Should be able to assist you with that's based in Barrie. And they're at 20 Gable Place. And again, the number is 802-479-1053 for folks in central Vermont. For others who are listening in, if you would like to call in, the toll-free number is 877-291-8255. Jane and Indra, do you have anything you would like to add in terms of resources for folks who may not have access to the Internet? Maybe we'll start with you, Indra.
Yeah, I think Jenny's calling showcases the need for us to engage Vermonters in various different ways. Oftentimes, we think there is a one-size-fits-all way of engaging people. There are a lot of Vermonters who don't have access to Internet, and when we are trying to develop serious form of engagement. Like, we really do need to meet where people are. In terms of the resources, I don't have any off the top of my head, but we will be activating a phone number where Vermonters can call in to the Climate Action's office and leave their suggestion, any question that may that they may have, and we'll have the public engagement team follow up. I do believe you will have a way to kind of post them somewhere. Isaac, I don't have the number off the top of my head right now, but, you know, I'd be more than happy to do an effective job of sharing that number where folks can share their comments and thoughts. But I don't have any resources off the top of my head.
Thanks, Indra. We are almost at the top of the hour. We're going to be hearing from Bill McKibben next. He's a climate author and activist. But one last question for you, Jane, and if you're able to give the 30-second answer, that would be wonderful. You know, what do you see as opportunities for Vermonters who are concerned about the climate crisis in terms of policies? What can everyday Vermonters do to make things better?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great question. I think that, you know, it has to be balanced with broad, strategic, overarching change by government, but personal action is what keeps us committed to changing. So the small things that add up do really add up. So I'll walk when you can, recycle when you can, be outside and just appreciate where we live. It's really great. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We've been talking with Jane Lesorchak, the director of the Climate Action Office at the Vermont Agency of Natural Resources, and Indra Acharya, a public engagement consultant at the Vermont Climate Council. I'm Isaac Evans France. Thank you so much, Jane and Indra, for joining us this morning. And thank you, listeners. Please stay on. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Bill McKibben, the climate author and activist. This is Vermont Viewpoint, WDEV out of Waterbury.